high school football lives here on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut, with Sunday Morning Quarterback and your host, Dave Rudin.
Welcome to Sunday Morning Quarterback, again brought to you by Dutchess Restaurants. And we want to welcome Dutchess and appreciate their sponsorship through the rest of the school year. We've had a good week of weekend of games. We had a good weekend of games here, and we've got a lot to talk about on today's show, and we got a couple different coaches to talk to that we haven't had on the air yet this season. Danbury is in the conversation in Class LL after their big win over Norwalk, and August Thierry is going to be joining us in a little bit. And can't believe we made it this far into the season, haven't talked at all about Darien, which is unusual, and they're just kind of have been laying low in the woods there in the Class L race, and Andy Grant is going to join us as well. Sean Ireland, as always, is back here with me. Sean, sorry about that. I had some technical difficulties and some people helping me out here getting it fixed, but how you doing?
Button, but no, it's all good. We're up and running. It's going to be a good show today.
Absolutely, and I want to bounce around. I want to talk a little bit, especially before Augie comes on, just about state playoffs, having six fields, how it pertains to a school like Danbury, which this year is going to be one of the beneficiaries. But I think the big topic of conversation happened on a rare 11 a.m. start yesterday morning in Westport, and that was the St. Joseph game against Staples. I don't know why we keep doing this, because I've stopped and I'm not doing this anymore, but I think it's just kind of like everybody keeps laying out a hurdle for St. Joseph each week, saying, okay, you got to jump over this, and each week everything's they win and everything's fine. I don't know when we're going to stop laying out these hurdles, other than the fact that they're playing a big game every week, so it might not be their fault. And then we wanted to see how Staples was going to come out, their first really big game since they got toppled by Wilton on their homecoming. And it was what we've expected from St. Joseph, not what the people in Westport wanted. After a really decisive 27-6 cadets win that I think reinforces the strengths of St. Joseph and how good they are, and how we're almost making too much of their two losses and not enough of their wins. And I think in Westport right now we have a big question mark that's looming over Paul Lane Field.
Yeah. I mean, Staples has a tough game coming up this week. They're playing New Canaan, so it doesn't get any easier for them. So we're going to see where they stand right now. But Dave, you're right with St. Joe's. I mean, they're 5-2. You know, they play tough game after tough game after tough game, and they got another one next week. And you know, if you look at the Class M rankings, they're in second place. You know, so and it's due to the fact of their strength of schedule and the teams that they're beating. But right now, if I had to rank the FCAC teams, I'd put New Canaan 1, Greenwich 2A, St. Joe's 2A, Wilton 2A. You know, like I can't split those three teams up. I think they're very equal.
If you had to put like teams up there that I'm trying to determine where they belong in 2 weeks, St. Joseph plays Wilton. To me, that's kind of like they're both tier one teams right now. I think we've kind of separated a little bit where. And I'll see if you agree with me. New Canaan, Greenwich, St. Joseph, and Wilton are in a tier by themselves. And then and then we have Staples. I'm going to put Fairfield Ludlow with them. And I'm probably going to put Darien with them. I think those are the next three teams right now. And, you know, I'm not so certain Staples is better than Ludlow right now?
Yeah, I think I would also throw Ridgefield in that, maybe the bottom of that tier, Dave, but I agree with you with the two tiers. I know Ludlow's pretty banged up. They weren't full go this past weekend. They still put up a fight. You know, I didn't
that
know
was a tie game. That was a tie game after three quarters.
Yeah, right. I think Staples Ludlow, I think it would be a dogfight. I really do. It might be one of those, like, last team that has the ball wins the game.
And they play also, and they play in 2 weeks.
Yeah. So this is all going to settle itself out, you know. But I do agree with you. Those four teams are at the top tier. They're in the tier by themselves right now.
I mean, do you see Staples having a shot against New Canaan or Greenwich? I don't right now. Not just a loss, but when you lose that decisively on your home field to both St. Joseph and to Wilton, I don't see how they do that. I'll tell you what, and again, this goes into how weak Double L is. It's possible if we're right about that Ludlow game. I mean, 5-5, it still could get you in, especially with strength of schedule and bonus points. But that Staples Ludlow game is going to be real, real, real important for the Wreckers just to make sure they have a little bit of a cushion to get in.
Yeah, I was looking at the Double L this morning. I think 5-5 with the strength of schedule, I think FCI teams do get in. I do. The Double L, you know, the top of Double L is fine, you know, but it fades off very, very fast, you know, and it's not enough. It's not a knock on the teams that are, you know, on that lower half. It's just the truth. I hate to say it, you know, but 5-5, I really do think you get into the Double L tournament this year.
Well, right now there are only 8 teams in Double L that have winning records. That's your premier division, CIAC. Your premier division, supposedly. You want to have 6 state champions? This is what you get. And we'll talk about that because it's an interesting dynamic, but. I was at Staples yesterday, and I said, it was real, real windy. You're not going to be able to pass the football. It's going to be a lot of play. Who's going to win the line?" And I said to Will Zaccanino, the great two-way lineman for St. Joseph, it was big boy football, and St. Joseph by far were the big boys, and four straight scoring drives in the second and third quarter, 81, 64, 71, and 61 yards. That's just pounding the ball on the other team.
Yeah, that's just imposing your will right there. You know, and I can't pronounce their last name, but Will
Zaccanino, he's...
That dude is a beast. he is a beast. I watched the highlights of that game. He's something else. You know, Finn Kilmartin, he did what he needed to do on offense. But again, their story is their defense, Dave. Their defense is something else. Staples got the ball, drove right down the field. They're like, okay, all right, here we go. We're going to have a game. And then after that, they didn't do much. You know, they didn't do much. A bunch of turnovers again. Blocked field goal. Not a bunch of turnovers, just a blocked field goal. 2 turnovers on downs. You know, St. Joe's defense, man, I would not want to prepare against them.
No, their lines again just were way, way too much. Staples could handle a player, and Zaccanino is one of them, but a player that hasn't gotten enough attention, and he's a good deep wide receiver, but that hasn't been the deep ball hasn't been really the strength of St. Joseph so far. But Lameek Black in the secondary as well. He had an interception to close out the game at the end. But he's another guy that in coverage is just a really, really good football player. You know, St. Joe's could be unbeaten. You know, their defense, you know, they've stopped New Canaan, held them without a point. The only time anybody scored on them was opening week, and we keep going back to the winning touchdown. Should have been a penalty, so they could have won that game, but they didn't. But if their offense, and what impressed me yesterday, if their offense can operate like it did yesterday, I don't know who's going to stop them with that defense. H.T. Jones played his best game of the year, and he's struggled with the deep ball. Because of the wind, the deep ball was no longer an option. And I almost think like the deep ball played to St. Joseph's strengths more, and it allowed H.T. to accentuate what he does best, was throwing the short to intermediate pass. They did a lot of screens, a lot of balls out into the flat. On third down plays, when they needed to get a first down, sent somebody over the middle, past the marker to get first downs. He even carried the ball a few times. And then just a really, really good Kilmartin with the four touchdowns is going to get a lot of the attention. But Manning Stanko ran for almost 100 yards. And Tristan Spain, the two of them, and with Jones, I think they had like about 175 yards rushing. HT was around 100 yards passing. If they do that again, that's what they need their offense to do: run the ball well, have a good short passing game, keep moving the chains, and you know those four drives were just so decisive.
Yeah, and Dave, that's why he's known around the league and probably at the state at this point that, you know, Joe Delvecchio is one of the best game day coaches out there. I'm sure they had, you know, a plan to attack deep, you know, but he doesn't put his pride in, you know, he swallows his pride. He's like, okay, we can't do this today. It's too windy, you know, but there are other things that we can do. So, you know, we always had the saying, don't get bored with what's working, you know, and Joe did that, you know, like, why take a shot deep if you know it's not there? You know, don't do it just to do it. You know, so they stuck to the game plan, it sounds like. You know, keep the ball on the ground, a lot of short passes, keep the chains moving, and then when you get inside the foot, the five-yard line, just give it to Finn and let him score.
Yep, they put him out of the Wildcat, and 8 or 9 yards, 4 carries, and he's in the end zone. Why don't we take a break right now, and we'll come back, talk a little bit more about this game, and then bounce around the league. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC.
Expert analysis and all things high school football. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback with Dave Rudin, live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Okay, we're back here, and Sean and I are going to continue to discuss yesterday's St. Joseph Staples game. Sean, let's move over to the Wreckers. Their two most difficult games of the season in the last 3 weeks, both at home, Wilton and St. Joseph, top 10 teams, and they've been outscored by a 68-13 margin.
I mean, they came back, they beat Ward in between, but the two big games, they lost the game pretty handily. And then, it unfortunately, it doesn't get easier for them. You know, they got New Canaan rolling in next week, and that's not going to be an easy game. And then they end with Ludlow and Greenwich. So, you know, there is a chance, I don't think it's going to happen, but there is a chance they can end up 5-5. You know, and that's after a 4-0 start, so... you know, Staples kind of got to get its act together a little bit because, you know, when you're state champs, nobody feels bad for you. You know what I mean? And they got some big boys coming up, so they better be ready.
Darien's been their best win, and that was decisive. You know, I was kind of watching their offense yesterday, and Nick Wall, the quarterback, when he wasn't running for his life, and he didn't have a lot of opportunities to really just sit back there and find receivers. And this happened to a lesser extent a couple of years ago with Caleb Smith, a quarterback for Staples, who his first year as a starter just lit it up. And he still had a really good second year, but he had to run the ball a lot more because he didn't have weapons. The surrounding cast around Nick Wall is just nowhere near what it was last year. And you're looking around and guys aren't open and there really aren't any real big playmakers. There's no guy that you're saying, you know, get him the ball and watch out. You know, Justin Hockey is filling that role right now, and I think he's a little bit more possession than game-breaking receiver, and he's good at that. But, you know, you saw just a lot of times Nick running for his life because guys aren't open. And if St. Joe's wasn't getting that initial rush, they were getting some coverage pressure because of the play of the secondary. And, you know, I'm guessing Nick is probably pretty frustrated right now.
Yeah, you think so because, you know, he is one of the better players in the league. You know, there's no doubt about that. You know, and the last 2 or 3 weeks they're struggling. You know, it's not a secret they're struggling a little bit. With the player that he is, you know, they can beat New Canaan. You know, they got to play their perfect game, but it can happen. You know, they just got.
I don't see it.
I don't either. I don't either. But I'm saying. New Canaan's not going in here saying, you know what, this is an easy game, let's look forward. You know what I mean? They have to play the game. You know, I think New Canaan is going to win. But Staples, if they play their best game, it's going to be a game.
Yeah, you know, I need to see their best game or at least a good game against a really top team. But I'll tell you what, the funny thing, and this is the way the state is, and we talk about the FCAC as a whole being down a little bit. It's the same everywhere. I did my state ballot last night, and I'm looking over it, and you're looking at what to do with Staples and Darien, and you know Darien, I didn't have in the top 15 for the first 2 weeks or so, just based on a lot of things I'd been told and had seen. And you're filling out the poll and you're saying, okay, well, you know, maybe they don't belong in the top 15, but who are you going to put in there to replace them? And you can't find anybody. I think I had Staples and Darien. I want to say that I had them 12 and 13 or 13 and 14 in my ballot yesterday. But I don't think they're the best of the big boys, but they're still better than, you know, almost the rest of the state. It's kind of a strange dynamic because of the top of the FCAC is so good. They're not quite at that level, but they're at the top of the very next level, not just in the FCAC, but probably in the state too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and that's the thing. Like, you know, you're starting to look at the possible pairings, and we talked about this in years past. You know, I would love to see Darien, you know, put them, I mean, right now they're ranked fifth, but you know what I mean? Put them seventh and let them play Cheshire, see what happens. You know, put them sixth, let them play Newtown, see what happens. I still think we are better than all the other leagues out there. And, you know, I think this year, you know, just talking about this year, our tier two teams, our Staples, Darien, you know, they're better than the schools in the other tiers. In the other leagues, that in the higher tiers, you know, and it's proven in the scheduling at the beginning of the year when the FCX winning week in and week out in the crossover game. So, you know, it's unfortunate. You know, Darien has the schedule. You know, they are a little down, but I still think they're good. You know, and it's crazy when we talk about this. They like we're saying Darien's down, Darien's down. There are 100 teams in the league right in the state right now that would take a Darien down.
Yeah, they'd like to be Darien down.
Right.
It's going to be interesting because their game with Ridgefield is probably number 3 on the marquee on what's a really big Friday night. I don't see again with Darien how they're going to beat Greenwich and New Canaan either. So that puts them at 5-4. And they got a really tough Ridgefield team that's 5-2. And then I'm trying to decide which block to put them in. And, you know, that game, yeah, I don't know if 4 losses is going to get you in Class L, but 5 losses, you're really in a – I think that probably keeps you out. You know, they're gonna have to beat Ridgefield on Friday night.
Yeah, if they lose Friday, I think their chances of making the state playoffs is very, very slim. They would have to beat Greenwich or New Canaan or maybe even both. And I don't think that's happening. So there's a lot of pressure on them on their next game against Ridgefield. you know, but, you know, if they win, man, yeah, if they're looking at 7-3, 6-4, they're not getting in. I don't think so. 7-3 will be real close.
Yeah, it's tough to say. I think it's a must win for them Friday night.
Yeah, put it this way, they have to win two of the three, and you know when the other two are Greenwich, New Canaan, this is probably a must win game.
Yeah, I think so. Hey, before not normally the game we would go to next, but it will be good to lead into our first guest, Danbury coach Augie Thierry, but a real impressive Danbury win over Norwalk on Thursday night in the rain and the wind up in Danbury. And we talked about this game last week, how it was really important to both teams' chances to get into the state playoffs. And I forgot, I didn't realize the game was streaming or I would have watched it. I actually wanted to go up there, and I was coming off 7 straight nights of work, and I was on fumes. So I have to admit, I'm trying to be a good boy and giving myself one full day a week off, and decided to do that on Thursday. But you watched the stream of the game. I'm not surprised Danbury won. I'm surprised 31-6 score.
Yeah, Danbury's defense was too much for Norwalk's offense. I was going to go to the game too, but when I saw the weather forecast, I was like, God, I'm sorry. As much as I want to go, it would not happen. But I did watch it. Darien's defense was just too much. You know, Norwalk's offense just didn't show up. That's the only, and you know, people say, well, it was windy, it was rainy. Yeah, but you know what? It was windy and rainy for the other team too. So, like, I don't want to hear, you know, those excuses. Great job by Jake O'Keefe. Love the last name. Sounds like we'd get along very well. You know, had 3 total touchdowns, but the story was Danbury's defense. You know, 4 turnovers, a blocked punt. They really pitched a shutout. North's only touchdown was a fumble return by Caden Francis for a touchdown. So their defense was the story.
I think Danbury's in. They're winning the next. They have a minimum of 6. Of 6 wins, and then that they play on Thanksgiving Eve with Ridgefield, and who knows what's going to happen with Ridgefield, but that game could be more than just a border rivalry when they play.
Yeah, Coach won't say. Coach Thierry, I love him. He's a great guy. He won't say it, but they're winning their next 2 games, okay? I'll say it for him. They're winning their next 2 games. They could be 6-3 going into Ridgefield. I think they would have a state playoff clinch by then, but it's going to adjust the seedings a little bit if they win or lose. But I think they're in at 6-4. I'm not saying that they will. If they are 6-4, they are in. I'm not saying they're losing to Ridgefield. Let me just be clear on that.
No. I say, yeah, in a worst case scenario where they were to lose to Ridgefield. 6-4 is getting you in, and it's been 21 years. I got to check 20 or 21 years for Danbury, and it'll get into our talk a little bit after, just to begin about how we have 6 classes, and Danbury's is a beneficiary of it, and it's nice to see the excitement that's going on up there. And why don't we take a break here? And when we come back, we will talk a little bit more about the Hatters with their coach, Augie Thierry. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC.
A look at Connecticut high school football action. Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut, with your host, Dave Rudin.
Okay, we're back here on Sunday Morning Quarterback. We've been talking a lot of Danbury football. And joining us right now, it's great that we're talking about the Hatters, and one of the good guys in the league and someone I can always count on to hang out at the end of Rudin Report media night to hang out afterwards. And that's Hatters coach Augie Thierry. Augie, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Thanks a lot. How what's the buzz like up there? It's kind of it's nice to see you guys having the success you are and being in the position that you are.
Absolutely. You can definitely feel it. There's no question about it. And I think it's been going on for a little while now. The city is, I think you mentioned it earlier on the show, how long it's been since we've been to the playoffs. And, that's been our mission since the beginning of the offseason. And, you can feel the city really galvanizing around us and the confidence rising in our ability to achieve that and to do it. And, the support has been amazing, and it's come from everywhere. And, we talk about our village and what it really takes to have a successful football program, and I'm just really proud of this community and obviously the kids and the entire program from top to bottom. And, you definitely feel the shift and the excitement, and we just want to keep that going and reach the peak of whatever it is that we can achieve as a program.
Yeah, you've been on the cusp of it a couple of times since you got there, and I remember coming up preseason on a Saturday morning, catch one of your practices and check out the team, and one of the overriding themes, and I think we've seen it and haven't seen it because a lot of it happens behind the scenes, is just how close this team is and how many activities you guys do as a team that you're not accustomed to seeing teams do, and it sounds like that's been continuing and that's been something that's really complemented what you guys do on the field.
Yeah, and I think it's the most important thing. This team, not that we haven't been close in the past, but this team, there's just so many authentic relationships amongst the kids and between the kids and the coaches, and even just amongst our coaching staff. We're a really tight-knit group, and we do spend a lot of time together. And it's not just during football season; it's all year long. And you build a certain level of trust and camaraderie and cohesiveness. That's again authentic and really sustains you through some of the tough times. And I think that's been our strength. And you look at it now. I mean, we've had some pretty significant injuries. We've had to have guys step out, but I just think the continuous force that's really kept us going and kept us on the path of success has been everybody on this team, everybody on this coaching staff, just wanting to pull through for each other and not let each other down, no matter what the circumstances are, and no matter what it is that they're being asked to do. Everybody wants to step up for one another, and that's what makes a great football team, and that's a big part of our success so far.
What did you see? We talked about your game with Norwalk on last week's show, and don't think anybody's surprised that you won the game. I think we are all a little bit surprised that the game was so one-sided. What were you guys able to do on real difficult weather conditions to win so decisively?
Well, first and foremost, I got to give a lot of credit to my coaching staff. These guys work relentlessly. They're so committed and dedicated to what we're doing. And I feel like they worked very hard putting together the right game plan. We all did collectively. And, we felt very prepared coming in. We worked very hard with the time that we had, which wasn't much time, obviously, preparing for a Thursday night game. But, I think that we felt like we had some good matchups. We felt like, we had the right recipe on how we wanted to attack them. And obviously we were prepared as much as we could all week for the weather. Every time Jake had to handle a snap or an exchange or throw the ball, I had the water bottle right in hand the entire time. I coached the entire practice with a water bottle in my hand, just kind of squirting his hands and keeping his hands wet and just getting him acclimated and getting us used to handling the ball. Under those conditions, we used the most worn out slick balls that we had. I want them to be very, we talk a lot about being uncomfortable being comfortable in uncomfortable situations. And we try to put them in as many uncomfortable situations as we could. And, our kids are mentally tough, physically tough. So those are the types of things it takes to win that type of football game. And, you know, we obviously game planning and preparing for Norwalk, we knew Easton Pace was going to be a threat and somebody that we were going to have to contain and game plan for. And my defensive coaches did a phenomenal job of doing that. And offensively, it was protect the football at all costs. You know, we had turned the ball over a lot the game before against McMahon, and we knew we weren't going to get away with that in a game like this. So, you know, being able to control the ball on the ground and use all the talented athletes that we have to get the ball in their hands in a way that was going to, you know, be effective, secure the ball, eat up clock, and take advantage of the opportunities that the defense and the special teams gave us, and that's exactly what we did.
Okay, I'll let our Norwalk expert, Sean Ireland, jump in here.
Coach, how are you?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, nice win the other night. Nice win. Very good job. I was telling Dave before that Jake O'Keefe, I love the last name. He sounds like somebody I'd really get along with.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Coach, talk me through, because I was watching on TV, and you could see the rain. You could see the rain on the camera. So, and you could tell it was windy. When it was, I want to say it was like 4th and 4 from maybe your own 20, 25, and this is when the game was still in, I think it was 10-0 at the time, and you decided to go through. Just talk me through your thought process on that one.
Yeah, so that was, we were right around the 30-yard line. It was about 4th and 3, 4th and 4. Obviously a risky call, but, you know, again, We practice for these situations. We have a lot of confidence in our offensive line and our, you know, ability to execute in situations like that. And, you know, we had the momentum in the running game. We knew what was going to be effective for us. And at that particular time, you know, one of their top defensive ends, number 10, he had been out of the game for a play or two. So we saw an opportunity there in a matchup wise. And, you know, again, we just talked to our players about rising to the occasion and just being able to, you know, push through in those types of situations, and the way LeVron was running the ball and even the confidence we showed. We started a new right tackle in this game. Brandon Essen was out for the game. So, we were asking him to step up, and he just was blocking and trapping with such confidence. And, you know, we made the call, and we knew we had to live with it regardless. Obviously, the way the defense was playing reassured us and gave us, you know, some confidence that if it didn't work out, you know, they had played with their backs against the wall plenty of times and been able to deliver. So 10-0, crucial part of the game. We started that drive on our own 5-yard line, like we knew we were up against. And once we converted that first down, we knew, we were headed towards doing what we needed to do to win the football game. We ended up completing that drive, scoring, making it 17-0. And at that point, it was, definitely the turning point and tipping point of the game for us.
Yeah, I think when you went up 17-0, I think that put the stamp on the game right there, in my opinion. Now, Coach, I told Dave, I know you won't say it, but I'll say it for you. How do you keep your kids focused the next couple weeks? You know, you're put it this way. I'm going to say it tonight. You're going to be very favored in your next two matchups. How do you keep them focused? How do you keep them, hey, let's not count our eggs before they hatch? You know, so what are you guys going to do the next 2 weeks to keep your kids just focused on what's in front of them?
Well, a couple of things. First off, hats off to Coach Miller at Bridgeport Central. He's done a phenomenal job of getting that program going in the right direction. You know, the record maybe doesn't show it, but they've been a lot more competitive in games, and you could see the things that they're doing systematically and the development of their players and how hard their players play for him. They're going to be going there at Bridgeport, 11 a.m. on a Saturday. You know, we're not taking any opponent lightly, but certainly when you look at the records, obviously, you know, there's a certain level of expectation going into games like that. But I think our kids right now, we're just focused on being the best football team that we can be week in and week out. And regardless of opponent, you know, it doesn't matter. We're day in and day out at practice, and everything that we're trying to do, we're trying to practice at a level and compete at a level where we can get out and make the playoffs and win playoff games. That's the mindset. So, you know, there's no letting off the gas. There's no backing up from from how hard we're practicing and how hard we're working to get better day in and day out, regardless of anything. So we just come out, we play our best football game, and we let the score take care of itself. And that's been our mindset, whether we played at New Canaan, Bridgeport, doesn't matter. That's our mindset as a football team. So we just try to stay locked into that mindset. And we really do have a group of kids who just believe, and they believe in each other, they believe in us, they believe in the message, they're bought in. You know, so when I say these things, it's not just coach speak. They know it's the truth, and they believe it. And we have great leadership on this football team. You know, Brandon Essen, he echoes that message to the kids in a way that he gets it across to them, where it kind of filters through, and it's coming from a guy at their level that they've gone to war with, and they believe it, and it's the truth. You know, they're a very mature group and mature minded in that way. So I don't worry so much about that, and believe me, I think you know me well enough, Sean, that if we feel like it's slipping a little bit and guys are getting comfortable, you know, they're going to hear it from me right away. So,
absolutely. Well, Coach, listen, I root for all FCS teams, but I love it when a team that has the same build as like a Norwalk, a Stanford, when they go on a run, and Coach, I've been following you all year and wish you nothing but the best of luck the rest of the way.
Appreciate it, Sean. Thank you, man.
Augie, how much fun is it coming to practice every day, knowing that your kids are not just trying to play a spoiler, trying to salvage something, but I'm sure it's just even greater intensity because they see what's within their grasp right now and they're trying to attain it. It's just got to be not just on game day, but just every day. You know, people don't see what happens behind the scenes and practices. It's just got to be a lot of fun and make it even more enjoyable to come to practice every day.
Oh, definitely. And these are the dog days, you know, as the weather gets colder and you know, it gets a little rougher. And it's a long grind too. You know, it's important for morale to be high, and you definitely feel that at practice, no question about it. And, they're definitely reinvigorated by the success that we're having right now, but still grounded and focused. And like I said, we spend so much time together. We really enjoy each other's company, and I feel like we look forward to seeing each other. You know, we're stern, we're about our business, but we're laid back. We were laughing with the kids constantly. You know, there's genuine, authentic relationships there, and we spend so much time together. You know, I think we just look forward to being around each other regardless, and the winning is byproduct of that. So it just kind of feeds itself. It's a self-sustainable energy that's palpable around the program right now, and even just around the building itself. The support that we have from teachers, from administration, from top to bottom, the mayor, everybody is behind us. And that's the thing that I say that's so special about playing, like Sean mentioned it before, like, you know, playing in a city like Danbury, you're playing for an entire city, you're playing for an entire community, and they're excited about it. And, you know, no knock to other schools that maybe, you know, I don't want to mention maybe private schools, but you kind of know where I'm going with that. You know, I think the public city school, there's just a different vibe and a different energy around that when you win. And, you know, I'm just really excited about all of it.
Well, Augie, I know I'm talking for others in the media. We like it a lot when it's not just the usual suspects, and the fact that we're getting ready to go into the eighth game of the season and we're talking to you, it's fun for me. I can talk to the same teams all the time. It's great when, you know, we saw what Stanford did a couple of years ago and what you're doing now. So it's fun to watch. And I promise you, when we do Media Day next year, you're going to be my coach representative to make sure we find a place that doesn't shut down at 8:15 afterwards. But you're my coach representative. But, Augie, you're one of the good guys in the league, and congratulations to what you and the Hatters have done so far, and wish you all the best, and good luck the rest of the way. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate your support always, man. All right, good luck.
Good luck.
Okay. All right, take care.
That was Danbury coach Augie Thierry. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back on the other side. You're listening to WICC Sunday Morning Quarterback.
Let's get back to the action. The Rudin Report presents Sunday Morning Quarterback live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Okay, we're back, and Sean, like I said, and you coached against Amagi. Really is one of the good guys, and he does things the right way. And people always say, well, the media, we favor this team. We favor the teams that we talk about all the time. You know, we don't favor them. We talk about what is newsworthy. That doesn't mean we're rooting for anybody. We root for the good story. And when you have a team like Danbury doing what they're doing, that's a good story. And it's good to, we all, when the kids are getting publicity, they feel good about themselves. And it's kind of nice when you get to give it to teams that aren't always accustomed to it.
Absolutely. And Dave, like, I've been there, and Norwalk and Danbury are very similar towns. When you win, and there's nothing like it. And I never coached in New Canaan, Darien Grant, so I'm sure it's great there. Do not get me wrong. But you literally have the whole town, the whole community is behind you when you're doing well, and there's nothing like it.
And these schools, Norwalk, Danbury, they don't have the resources that the teams that are in the top 10 have. They're not getting, the extra camps that they go to. They're not getting the nicest equipment or have the best weight rooms. So they're fighting an uphill battle. It has become, I think, in all high school sports, halves. And, the schools that have the better resources are going to have an advantage. So that makes it all the better.
Yeah, and not only that, Dave, it's starting to happen in the Darien, Grantchester, towns like that too. But nobody gets poached more than the inner city schools.
Absolutely.
Nobody. And, that's a battle that we fight year in, year out. I can tell you my last year we went 5-5 and we lost three games by less than a touchdown. We lost our three best players to private schools. If we had those three kids, we're 8-2 and we're in the States. And it's frustrating. So when you're having a year like Augie's having right now, just enjoy it because, man, there's nothing like it.
And everybody, like you said, is getting poached. And one reason maybe the top teams aren't quite at that level is because they're getting poached. And it's too bad. I never understood the reclassifying, why you want to give up an extra year of your life growing up and how that dynamic, how it all works out. And I still think a lot of times it's fool's gold and you're still going to end up where you're going to end up. But an interesting dynamic here, we talked about it and we've kind of been waiting for, just talking about the CIAC. The CIAC, in my eyes, more than any sports organization I've ever seen, takes an intramural approach to sports. They care more about being all-inclusive and having all of these divisions and giving away a whole lot of trophies. That, to them, they're going to hate hearing it, but just look at the way they do things, and it's indefensible. It's not defensible. But they would rather have everybody getting a chance to play than putting together the very, very best field and having the best championship possible. A school like Danbury is the beneficiary of that. If we had, double L ostensibly should be your very, very best class. It's all the biggest schools. And it's one of the weakest divisions out there right now, with only 8 teams with winning records, 8 teams out of 22. And, we're looking at a whole bunch of teams with only 1 or 2 losses. And this is in by no way at all a knock on Danbury. Danbury, this is the schedule. This is the way things are. And they're going out there and playing the games. But for a state, a governing body that prioritizes, emphasizes being sort of all-inclusive in terms of their championships, they love a story like Danbury. We're talking about Danbury so much, and rightly so, and good for them. But this will be their argument about why they do things the way they do. You wouldn't be talking to Danbury right now normally if we didn't do things the way we do.
Yeah, Dave, and I don't know what the right answer is, you know, because if you do look at every single other sport, you only have to win 40% of your games to get in. And football is the only sport that's different, which it is what it is. You know, we can't have a 32-team playoff. We just can't do that. But there's something that needs to be done. You know, there's something that needs to be done. And Dave, I don't have it in front of me right now, the top 10. How many Double L schools are in the top 10? Maybe two, three?
Fairfield Prep in Greenwich right now. It's possible. We'll see where New Britain ends up if they get in. They're on the cusp, and we'll see if Staples falls out. So it's possible you could have two for certain.
Right. So that's the point, Dave. I told you this before. They got to come up with the criteria more than just school size, because the proof is there that the bigger schools are not the best schools in the state. So. You want to do six champions? That's fine. Reclassify the divisions, okay? And it's not school size. I don't know what, you know, next year, Dave, put it in our notes now. Next year we're going to be talking. New Canaan's going to be in the top 10. Greenwich is going to be in the top 10. Ann's going to be in the top 10. Fairfield, we know what schools are going to be in the top 10. And it has nothing to do with school size. It's just how their programs are. And there's nothing wrong with it, but, like,
well,
all those schools.
Yeah, look at the schools that are in Double L right now. Just going from the FCAC, you have West Hill, Stanford, Bridgeport Central, Brian McMahon, just at on the lower end of things. So those are all schools that, for the most part, certainly West Hill and Central have struggled. McMahon and Stanford have had some pockets where they've had success, but Those are four city schools. You got Danbury in there, which is having one of its better seasons. And then you got schools like East Hartford in there, and you got Wilbur Cross, and you got Kennedy. So it's really Double L isn't the best. It's really like big city schools.
Yeah, that's all that it is. That's what I've been trying to say for a long time now. You got to look at more than just school size, because that's not what it's about. And for the state as small as Connecticut to have six classes,
it's a joke.
Open your eyes. Come on, open your eyes. It's not working. Dave, we talked about, and we disagree a little bit on this, but not so much. I would be okay with five classes if you put all the co-ops and tech schools in one division.
I'm fine with putting the co-ops and tech somewhere.
Yeah.
You got to do one of two things. If they really want to do football the right way, and they're trying to do this in basketball, but they don't understand the way basketball works, and they go by your past record and not what you've done this year. But I don't know why you can't have a seeding. I don't know why you can't have like the three or four different polls. Some of the different national and regional polls and the state polls, and why we can't go to put together a really, really great tournament with all the best teams in there, try to seed maybe the best eight or however, and then go back to when other teams go to LM&S.
Yeah, I would be.
And that would be just fair. Like what in basketball is Division 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, and you know what, Dave? Those teams, they would have a blast playing, you know, and they'd fight for that championship just as much as anybody else. And then you know what, Dave? At the end of the year, there's no argument who the number one team in the state is. You win that tournament, you're the number one team. You know, right now, Killingly is not going to play New Canaan. You know, they're not going to play each other. So there's going to be an argument, and who knows who's right, who's wrong. If they both go undefeated, okay, who's the best team in the state? We don't know.
Yeah, it's the state loves to put give a lot of trophies out and have a lot of championship games. Why don't we take a break here? When we come back, we're going to get into Darien football with Andy Grant. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC.
Game recaps, athlete interviews, and everything high school football. It's Sunday Morning Quarterback with Dave Rudin, live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Okay, we're back here on Sunday Morning Quarterback, which is brought to you by Duchess Restaurants. Fresh food, serve fast. I want to welcome the Duchess Restaurant chain to the Rudin Report Sunday Morning Quarterback family. And we're going to make a jump from one D team to a second D team. We went from Danbury, and now, surprised we're this far into the season, haven't talked to him yet. But we've got to catch up with the Darien football team. We've talked a lot about them, but not with their coach. And joining us right now, we have Andy Grant. Andy, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it has been a while. I've been keeping notes, so don't worry.
All right. Well, we've been, you know, you've been, it's kind of an interesting season. I still don't know at this point where we're going to fit you in, but you got to help Sean and I out right now. And I got busy last night. I would have done this normally and called you, but we haven't seen anything. We saw you won 28-0 yesterday over Trumbull, but not much news on the game. Just tell us a little bit about it. And did you stick with the quarterback change first of all?
Yeah, so we started with Lane. Really started pretty hot in the pocket. Moved the ball on our first two drives fairly nice up and down the field. We wanted to play Lane on defense as well yesterday. We wanted to do a few different things with our running back. So after the first quarter, we moved on to back into Jay. Give us a really good opportunity to kind of do different things offensively, but both played, and we started with Chase, and then he moved to defense, and we were up 21-0 at the half. We were happy with the way the kids fought. We were happy with the way the our guys responded from last week. Trumbull's a very physical team, and they don't have the best record, and Marist does a really good job. And they continue to fight, and they continue to play hard, and 4 and 11, 0. Those kids are tough kids, and they fought the entire time. So it was physical for sure. They just had struggled to move the ball offensively and kind of capitalize on a few penalties from us. But they're physical, they're tough, and hopefully better days for Trumbull ahead. But we were happy with what we did here at Darien.
Yeah, I saw them against Greenwich a couple of weeks ago, and even when the game got out of hand, those guys are physical, and they don't stop to the final whistle. So that's you see some teams in that situation give up. Trumbull certainly not one of them. Just because it's kind of cast the way the season has played out for you, just to go back, but you lost a lot from graduation, and then you lose transfer, your starting quarterback. You would have had the best quarterback probably in the state, definitely in the league, and then you lose a receiver who after Esposito, probably the next best receiver. How do you, when you're put in that situation and you lose people you don't expect to lose, how does that affect your planning for the season at the outset?
Sure. I mean, obviously, keeping Ben and Thomas would have been great for us as a program. Great young men, great football players, obviously, as you've seen over the last 2 years. But our motto was we need to play with the bodies that want to be here in Darien, that want to be part of this run. So we had to make some changes at quarterback. We had to make some changes at receiver. We had to do some different things schematically on offense. And obviously that transfers a little bit into what we do defensively, because you need to turn into a little more of a ball possession team to take some of the burden off that defense when you know you can't put up I think it was 42 points a game was our average last year, or 37, somewhere in that range. So it changes what you need to do. You need to take a few more risks on special teams. You need to try to create turnovers on defense. But our mindset was we knew for 4 or 5 months kind of what was going to show up in August. I think from a team standpoint, it was a little bit of a down against kind of everything was falling against them mentality for a month or so, and we really just stuck with the seniors and said, guys, this is your last hurrah, and you guys want to be here, and you guys want to fight together, and you guys want to do the best you can for the community, for the team, for the school. Everything else is immaterial, and we need to think about how to pull ourselves together. We need to pull together on what we can do to overcome those losses and fight like hell every single day in practice and in film and in lifting to put ourselves in the best situation possible.
Well, you're 5-2 right now, and certainly no shame in the two losses to top 10 teams, Staples and St. Joseph. You guys struggled a little bit on both sides of the ball in those two games, but those are St. Joseph in particular is right up there with everybody. But, when I've seen you play, the one constant, your defense by and large has really stood out, and we talk about him a lot, and maybe he hasn't gotten as much attention this year as he should, but Ryan Gately's just having a terrific year for you guys.
Yeah, he's kind of lived up to the advertising that was coming into this year. He's been physical. He's turned into a leader. He's playing offensive line for us when we need him to. We make him switch his number to 52. He was wearing a different number at the beginning of the year because we just needed to play more line. Defensively, he's very tough to block. You look out on the field and his jersey's torn. He's getting double teamed or triple teamed. The ball's constantly going the opposite direction. He's had a very good year, and we're excited to see what he does for the next 3 weeks, and obviously excited to see what he does with Air Force. But his mentality has been kind of me against the world, and he feels disrespected and from some of the things that happened to him last year and some of the comments that people made about him as a sophomore. And I think he holds those pretty near to his heart when he fights every single day at practice and works his tail off in games because I feel like he's trying to separate himself and prove that he is the best D-lineman in the state.
He's certainly in the discussion. I've watched him play. I don't know how anybody could dispute him being right up there with the very best. Sean, jump on in.
Coach, how are you?
I'm great. Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. So, Coach, Dave said you guys are 5-2, and, we were talking earlier in the show how, it's maybe considered a quote-unquote down year for Darien, but there's probably 100 teams that would sign up for this right now. You know, with you 5-2 in the L, which is probably the hardest division to get into states, and you have three big games coming up, what do you do to keep the kids, just focused on one game at a time, and worry about the points and all that stuff when the season's over?
Yeah, I don't even think we've talked about Greenwich or New Canaan other than what I'm asked about in the media. I've really tried to make an emphasis this year of going 1-0, and it's so cliche, and you hear the kids kind of giggle about it, but we try to go 1-0 even in a drive. We try to talk about one play at a time. That's kind of our mindset is our backs are against the wall. Yeah, we get that. We get that we kind of let two games go, and from a staff perspective, player perspective, from an organization perspective, we think we either got out coached or we got out energied or some things didn't fall our way in those games. And we're using that to be our motivation. We're trying to look at, hey, this week is Ridgefield. They are very, very talented. They're hungry. They're looking to knock us off, to keep themselves in the playoff hunt as well. And so we're looking at that. Hey, we need to win the first drive on Friday night. And it's not about winning in the fourth quarter. It really comes down to for us as a staff, for us as a team, we need to win the first drive. If that's on offense, we need to win it. If that's on defense, we need to win that drive and make them punt. And kind of just let that spiral into the next drive. If we don't think like that and we start looking at New Canaan and we start looking at Greenwich, we start saying, how can we get into the playoffs? For the staff, that's when I get on the most. If we start to overlook a play, we start to overlook a bracket in practice, we start to overlook a phase of the game, like that's what my job is in practice, is to make sure we're dialed in on every detail, dialed in on special teams in the game, dialed in on what we're doing to really eliminate mistakes and put ourselves in the best position possible to win every single play and every single drive and set ourselves up over the course of those 48 minutes.
Well, Coach, you know, like I just said before, the fact that you're 5-2 and that's everybody saying Darian's down, what do we do? And the fact that you guys are doing what you're doing, that's credit to you and your staff. And, you know, you're doing a fantastic job, and just keep it up the rest of the way.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it really comes down to I get a lot of the accolades and I get a lot of the people saying that to me. And it really comes down to I have 10 coaches who are bought in every single day, and I have a support staff who works tirelessly for the program, and I have a community of parents that support us, and obviously it comes really down to how hard do the players want to work and believe in what we're doing, and I think the buy-in's been pretty good. So we need to continue to fight, we need to continue to struggle, and the schedule's not been easy. I mean, Naugatuck is a down year, and that usually is a really tough game, but I like these tough games, and I'd rather be 5-2, play all this competition than sit there and play teams that we know we should beat 42-0. So it's a grind, because every single day is kind of a fight, and there's not a lot of down games in the schedule for us. But the competition's been great; it's making our kids play at a higher level, playing as coach at a higher level, so we're excited to kind of continue on and look forward to Ridgefield.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, you just look at Friday night, and you got Greenwich at Wilton, New Canaan at Staples, and then this game may not look quite as appealing, but in terms of its importance and long-term ramifications, Ridgefield's going to have a shot to get in, and with what your schedule is, you need to try to win out. This is a really big game for you on Friday night.
Yeah, I think Ridgefield had a few down years. They seem to be, you know, in a much better place this past year, and they certainly have some size. It's a quarterback position, and they're physical, and they play hard, and it's kind of get that sense as the Ridgefield of old a little bit is coming back into the FCAC, which isn't great for us on Friday, but it's great for the FCAC for sure. And having them be physical and good and talented is a great thing for the league, and they're well coached, and it's hard to turn a program around as quickly as he has. So our focus is really on getting our quarterback position dialed in, getting our offensive line dialed in, getting our running backs to be dialed in on every single snap, the same thing with receivers, and every single thing we're doing is focusing on that detail to play Ridgefield at a very high level and put ourselves in a position to be successful.
All right, well, Andy, you're doing your usual great job there. I always say that all the coaches, you know, one of the good guys in the league, but there's not all the football coaches, by and large, are it's just a bunch of good guys, which makes it a lot of fun to cover. And as Sean said, if people are saying this is a little bit of a down year, and I don't think we can say that until we see the next three games, but most schools will sign up for 5-2. So you got a brutal schedule coming up. Good luck with it, and thanks for taking time here.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Have a great rest of your Sunday.
You too, Andy. Thanks a lot.
All right, talk soon.
Take care. That was Darian coach Andy Grant, and we're going to take a final break. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on WICC.
Let's hear what Dave Rudin has to say about this week in high school football. You're listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Okay, we're back. And again, thanks to Andy Grant. Sean, you know this better than anybody. It's funny because I think about when I sign off with all the coaches we have on, I say, you know, you're one of the good guys. And it sounds like I'm just a brown nose to every coach. But and this comes, you know, the media and other media and I, we talk about like which coaches cooperate the most. And football coaches could be the most uncooperative bunch because it's football and they know they're going to get attention no matter what they do. Yet they get it, and football coaches could not be more cooperative in the FCAC, and there's no jerks in there. There are all really good guys that want to win on, as Lou Marinelli said last week, they want to beat each other on Friday night and Saturday afternoon, but afterwards it's all about the league for them.
Yeah, you know, and Dave, I said it too, we want to kill each other for about 2 hours, and then after that we're back to, you know, we're being friends again. You know, the reason why we do it, we're not doing it, it's not a self-serving reason. You know, the coaches are doing it to promote their kids, to promote their program. So, you know, like, this doesn't count as all the time they put into the film and, the game planning and all that stuff. But this is extra that every coach in this league would do for their kids and their program. And, you know, I don't know many of the coaches around the state, but I know the coaches in the FCAC. And to a man, they're all great guys.
It's funny because I was at the girls' soccer final this past week with Scott Erickson, and we were just kind of talking about this subject. And at this point, I don't mind throwing them a bit under the bus because of the hardship, the pain they gave me. But by and large, field hockey coaches are the opposite of the football coaches, and he's writing about field hockey for Hearst. And you would think, you know, they don't get a lot of attention. They would go out of their way to help promote. And you can't get them to reply for any previews or anything. And again, you contrast that. Coaches in almost any sport are really good. But football and baseball coaches, if you're going across the board, 1 through 16, football and baseball coaches are the most cooperative in the FCAC, and the football coaches are the ones who could give you the hard time and don't. They're quite the opposite.
Yeah. Again, like I said, and they're not doing it for themselves, Dave. You know, and I hope everybody knows that they're doing it for their kids and for their program.
Yeah, that's what they don't get sometimes when we're asking them for info. You're promoting your sport, you're promoting the league, and you're promoting your teams and kids, and that's my little, it only matters to the media, but we don't care about it department. But it's true, and I was thinking about that because I sign off almost every way the same each week with all the coaches. Why don't we real quick? Let's look ahead and real fast in terms of, we didn't really talk about Greenwich's 41-14 win over Fairfield Ludlow yesterday. 14-14 game into the fourth quarter, and then Greenwich wore them down. I know Ludlow was hurt, or at least Ludlow was missing some key people, and it was also a little bit, I don't see how you take Ludlow lightly, but they're coming off playing their biggest regular season against New Canaan that was hyped up, and then they've got Wilton ahead, and Wilton beat them last year, so there's a little bit of a revenge motive and revenge factor to their weekly planning here. But I don't know if they were flat early because it was a bit of a trap game, but Ludlow hung with them for three quarters and then they pulled away.
Yeah. And you saw it in there, and this is the game I listened to on the radio. I didn't watch, but I listened to the whole thing. It was tight in the fourth quarter. It was tied 14-14. Then turned into the Jack Kelly show. You know, he had a bunch of big touchdowns there at the end. Hector Lopez with another two touchdowns. But you heard it in their post-game interviews, Dave. They were already talking, hey, Wilton beat us last year. So maybe they were looking past Ludlow. I hope not, you know, because, you know, earlier in the year, you know, when Norwalk came into town, same kind of thing happened. But, you know, it's going
to be going next week. I have four games written down next week, Dave. I can't wait. It's going to be a good week.
Yeah, Saturday, well, it was St. Joe's and Ludlow, too. But it's going to be interesting to see how Wilton, Wilton doesn't have the size and they don't have the depth. But I think this is a real interesting game to see where Wilton's. Well, you know what? They've beaten everybody. I'm going to stop saying there. We're going to see right now in terms of they're playing a top two team. Whether they're up just with the very very top or they're a middle of the top 10 team. I mean, it's kind of nitpicking there, but I'm really intrigued to see how Wilton does.
Yeah, and Dave, you know what? I hope plays a factor. Wilton home field advantage is second to none. I think their student section is just as good, if not the best, in the league. Their venue is great.
Bigger than Tiger Hollow?
Oh, man. When Ridgefield is good, nobody wants to go to that place. You know, the drive is terrible. At least from Norwalk, the drive is terrible. You know, like, I still don't agree with the setup up there. They should move the student section on the other side because the visitors' locker room is literally right behind them, and they're yelling down you. They're throwing things, you know, whatever. That's a different thing. But Wilton student section, Wilton's fan base, the whole venue itself, Fujitani Field, I think that is the best venue, besides Boyle Stadium, that is the best venue in the FCAC, and that place is going to be rocking on Friday night.
Okay, and then New Canaan Staples, real quickly, we can bounce around, but again, that's Staples is really in need of a good win, and you know what? I think, and they need the win, but Staples, even with a good performance against New Canaan, they've struggled the last couple weeks against St. Joe's and Wilton. I think they at least need to play well.
Yeah, they're going to have to play their best game. We talked about it before. They're going to have to play their best game. You know, they can't play like they did against St. Joe's. They can't play like they did against Wilton, or they're going to come out with another loss. They're going to have to put on their A game, which they are capable of doing, you know, and that's what I was trying to say before. I think New Canaan is going to win, but Staples can make it a game, and, you know, let's see what happens. If it's a one-score game in the fourth quarter, let's see what happens and see how it plays out.
Okay, well, a good show as always, and we're going to have a lot to talk about next week. And, Sean, we'll do this again next Sunday morning.
Sounds good.
Okay, you've been listening to Sunday Morning Quarterback, which is brought to you by Dutchess Restaurants. Dutchess Restaurants, fresh food, served fast. Have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next Sunday.